Welcome to the Pint Glass Football Podcast.
This is Pint Glass Football. We talk NFL and college football. I'm your host, Brad Fowler. Follow us at pintglassfootball.com. If you're new to the show, hit that subscribe button. What's up, PGF Nation? We're back with another great show today. NFL trades at the deadline. We're going to talk about some of the big moves. Should the Packers draft another quarterback in April? Is Oregon a national championship contender? NFL and college football takeaways from last week. We'll preview some of the weekend's biggest games, plus a lot more. But joining me to break it all down, my co-host, Alex Higdon. Alex, what is going on?
Hey, Brad, I feel good. I feel like we were on track last week coming into this week. A little bit of hiccup, but I think we still had we were on the right track. So I'm feeling very good about where we are now after being on the schneid for a few. Wink, wink, we're talking about betting. But I can't wait to get into the games.
Alex, a lot of stuff going on this week, of course. We got a lot of games to talk about, but I want to start with some of the news. We've had some moves at the trade deadline, and we also had a pretty major injury. Kirk Cousins, he's going to miss the rest of the year. This really sucks. Torn Achilles, like I said, obviously is going to be out the rest of the year. This is a tough blow for the Vikings. They were starting to play some better football in recent weeks. He was having, personally, a really great statistical season, maybe on pace to have one of his best years ever. But here's the thing, Alex. In a weird way, I think this is actually a good thing for the Vikings because they've tried to quietly rebuild this team last offseason. We talked about it in the offseason, getting rid of a lot of key players, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, let's face it. They weren't going anywhere this year anyway. I think that this, in a weird way, Alex, might be a good thing for this franchise because they can finally rip the Band-Aid off and officially rebuild this team this offseason. We're going to talk about the Packers here in a little bit, but I want your thoughts on Kirk Cousins and this injury, and then we'll jump into some of the trade deadline moves here as well.
Kirk Cousins, I know for everything that everyone has been talking about, oh, he can't play in big time, or he can't play in primetime games, or he's not going to. I mean, this guy has been the picture of consistency in terms of what he does. Yeah, you may like not like what he does perhaps in a game or two during primetime, which I think he's dispelled that. Very good quarterback, consummate professional. I mean, we all watched Quarterback on Netflix, and we kind of perhaps hopefully endeared a lot more people to Kirk Cousins. Too bad for him, but to your point, it allows the Vikings to really go into the mold in which they need to do. We know they were trying to trade Danielle Hunter before the trade deadline. They also made a trade to bring in Joshua Dobbs. Now, I know the rookie that they have behind Kirk Cousins, whose name escapes me at the moment, but why are you trying to quote-unquote win? I guess you're supposed to try and win, but you might as well just ride it out with the season and get the highest pick that you can. Who knows? You can end up in one of those first two picks and get yourself a Drake May or a Caleb, because right now you're just in rebuild mode. So just play with the players you have, and then just basically get the highest draft pick you can. It sucks. It sounds crappy. And I know for those players, it's really crappy, especially Triple J, but this is what you have to do as a business.
I want to talk about some of the trades that we did see at the trade deadline. I want to start with Leonard Williams, because this was an interesting trade. Traded to the Seahawks from the Giants for a second and fifth round pick. This move, it kind of makes sense for both teams in a lot of ways. I mean, Seahawks have a good team. They're trying to win the division. You add a piece like Leonard Williams, and from the Giants' standpoint, this is a team that still has holes. They need to continue to rebuild this roster, but up front is not really a place where they need a whole lot of rebuilding. That's actually one of the few parts of this team that's really playing well. Dexter Lawrence is a beast. Thibodeau is playing great football. Leonard Williams is expensive, and let's face it, his best football is probably behind him. He's been really a non-factor for the Giants this year. Only 1.5 sacks, and I think giving up a second and a fifth is actually a lot for this guy. So I like the move for the Giants. I understand the move for Seattle, but I think they gave up a lot for this guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not sure what Seattle's doing in terms of whenever they decide to make a trade, because they are a winning franchise. They've done a lot of great moves. We can go back for the two ones that they gave up for Jamal Adams. There's a lot of trades in there that we simply did not understand. And you're right. He's a free agent at the end of the year. So I'm not sure he'll be 30 at the end of his going into his new contract. However, not sure why they gave up a second and a fifth. That didn't make any sense. I mean, this is a person personally to me, I don't think he would have been a hot commodity on the wire to be traded. I'm sure perhaps you could have even given up maybe 2 fourths. He, again, to your point, Brad, he's not, I don't know what, I did not get a chance to look at his snaps and his pressure rate or anything like that. He does bring added value that team. I mean, I guess he also is a USC alum. I'm just trying to figure out why they overpaid for this person, let alone 2 draft picks. He definitely was not worth 2 draft picks. I didn't get it, but I think it's a good addition. We'll talk about the 49ers later, obviously, but they're kind of seem to be on a downslide, and maybe they're saying this is our chance to pounce, so this is a move they felt they needed to make.
Giving up a second and a fifth, I was really surprised by that, especially when you compare it to the Chase Young trade to the 49ers. All they had to give up was a 3rd-round pick for this guy. What do you think of that move?
I'm not sure what the 49ers are thinking. I mean, I don't know who they were looking at on their line that may be not performing to the level that they felt they need to bring in a guy of this caliber. Not that he's been performing to it, but they need to bring a guy in of this caliber who's a former number one overall pick. And we know that Washington was out on him already because they did not even pick up his 5th-year option to say, hey, let's run it back one more time and see if you can redeem yourself. And we also know, and I'm pretty sure we'll mention it briefly, they also traded both ends as well. So Washington was in full sell mode. But I think it'll be good for the San Francisco rotation. Similar a lot to, you know, a lot of what people saw. And I'll just go briefly back in history for a moment. If we remember what the Giants did with their rotation, because Justin Tuck was not a starter during that time when they beat the Patriots the first time. He was part of the rotation. And then moving forward to recency history, what we saw last year with Philly, that defensive line rotation was so impactful to them getting to the Super Bowl, to them everybody having so many sacks, they kept everybody fresh. So maybe this is something that they're looking at, that they're not getting enough pressure, and they bring in a guy who has the capability of getting pressure, and now you put him with a Nick Bosa and then with an Amik Robertson and with a Javon Hargrave, and perhaps this is something to try and turn things around. They felt they needed to do something. This is the one thing they decided to do.
Yeah, I think it's good value for a guy that still has a decent amount of upside. He's got 5 sacks this season, so he's been a pretty productive player up front. And I think the 49ers are looking at this defense, and it's really kind of slid, especially during this losing streak. We've seen this defense kind of take a step back, and a lot of it has been a lack of pressure on quarterbacks, and it's exposing that secondary when they can't get after quarterbacks. So I like this move. I think he's definitely worth the 3rd-round pick, and for a team that still feels like they can be in the Super Bowl mix, I like being aggressive and going after a guy like this. So I think that move actually made a lot of sense. You talked about his former teammate, though. Montez Sweat gets traded to the Bears. This one was interesting. What did you make of this move, Alex?
I think the Bears are, well, because I know the Bears were sitting at one point with the most, if they're not, again, sitting with the most cap space. I'm not sure, and I meant to look this up, actually. But just from a rule standpoint, you can't be, you have to spend 90% of your cap every 5 years, basically. So I think they're probably coming up to that. And they identified a guy that they said, hey, you know what? We'll trade for them, because they did pick up multiple picks from that Carolina Panthers trade. They identified a guy in Montez Sweat. I'm sure they probably looked at both players, Sweat and Young, and they decided on Montez Sweat to go get him. And this is a person that they're going to keep and then also pay. So I think this is a little bit strategic move by Ryan Poles. They get a edge rusher to go with whoever's already on the line, and they can also maybe bring in somebody else as well to go along with Montez Sweat. And it's also a guy they're going to pay, again, to the point of having to meet that 90% salary cap floor that they have to spend 90% of their salary cap.
I think on the other side, though, for Washington, if you're Ron Rivera and that coaching staff, you've got to be nervous, because I think right now management is telling you that they're about to blow this thing up. I think we're going to see a whole new regime in Washington next year. Alex, the Cincinnati Bengals are back. Joe Burrow finally really is looking like he's 100% healthy from that calf injury. It's not complicated. I mean, this is a quarterback league now. when he's healthy, they're going to be a really tough team to beat. Burrow was lights out. They have weapons. They have a run game. The defense has always been underrated. They can rush the quarterback. Watch out, because here come the Bengals. This team is really starting to click.
Yeah, Brad, this was a dismantling. I'm sorry, similar to what we saw with the Vikings the previous week. And let's be clear, the Bengals left 10 to 14 points on the board as well, because they did not convert on a field goal. And there was a red zone opportunity to score right before halftime. Now, this is three games in a row. I'll go to the Bengals first. Joe Burrow back. We identified this game. We said coming out of the bye, because Joe Burrow has started to surge, trend up. And then going into the bye, he was going to get some more rest. They were going to be able to tweak some things. They were going to be on the way up. And they showed it immediately, because they started running Joe Mixon, which is something I had been saying. Run the ball. Joe Mixon is a good running back. Run the ball. Even though they kind of pulled back from that a little bit, he did have 16 carries for 87 yards and a touchdown. Even Joe Burrow, and this is how we know that calf is feeling better, he has 6 carries for 43 yards, so he was able to get outside the pocket. And then the defense did what they do. They were on point. Now, on to the 49ers. This is now another week, which is why I consistently said on and off mic, Brock Purdy, I think he's a good quarterback, but for me, I need to see a full 16 games before I have anything. This does not mean he's a bad quarterback. What this means is it's very comfortable, and it's probably very comfortable for any quarterback when they have a comfortable lead to play from ahead. Three times he's had to come from behind, and he's thrown bad interceptions. And not only that, they shut down the running game. So what it also says is when another team shuts down the running game, Christian McCaffrey, 12 for 54, you're going to struggle as well. Everything is not always going to be perfect in this NFL. You are going, at some point in time, it doesn't matter if you're Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, or if you're on the lower end of quarterbacks that are going to be making the playoffs, like Geno Smith, anything like that, your quarterback is going to have to make, at some point, some type of play. And Brock Purdy right now is showing us he's got to figure out where he is, because that was a terrible, terrible interception and bad decision-making. Rolling out to his left, throwing the ball right, and he does not have the strongest arm. So San Francisco is going to have to figure out some things. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, they're on a bye week this week. It'll be interesting to see what they look like when they come back as well. And we get to watch the Bengals surge forward now at 4-3 in that tough AFC North to see where they end up as they now get into the back end of their schedule to see how they can surge forward. So two teams right now trending in two opposite directions. Interesting to see where they'll go when they come back.
Yeah, 49ers suddenly reeling after that great start to the year. Brock Purdy is dealing with really the first adversity of his career. Like you said, two costly picks in this game. The one in the red zone was a killer for sure. Now, he still made some big-time throws, and he does every week. Tony Romo pointed it out a few times during this broadcast. I'm not selling my stock on Purdy. I think the 49ers can still win with him at quarterback. I mean, here's the thing. He still went 22 for 31 for 365 yards in this game. He had 9 explosive passing plays over 20 yards that led the NFL in week 8. So outside of a couple bad picks, and yeah, those were costly, this guy still had a really nice game overall. He's still showing that he can make all the throws, the big throws. He's accurate. I'm just not ready to punt on Brock Purdy. I think they're going to get it together. I think coming out of this bye, we're going to see a different 49ers team. We're going to see some adjustments, and I think this defense and the running game are going to get back on track, and it's going to take some pressure off of Brock Purdy. And the defense, I think, is actually the bigger story here, because the defense has taken a step back. And I can't help but think that losing DeMeco Ryans was a really big loss, and maybe a bigger loss than we realized, because we're also seeing the job that he's doing in Houston. This guy was a really good coach. And nothing against Steve Wilks, but this team just doesn't look the same. I think it's part of the reason, like we talked about earlier, why they added a guy like Chase Young to kind of start to get this pass rush going again. Now, towards the end of the game, I saw that the Bengals had 30 first downs I mean, that is alarming. They were moving the ball at will. Now, Burrow is great. They have a ton of weapons. I get that. But you can't win if you can't make stops in this league, especially versus good teams. So great defense and a strong run game. We know that's always been the recipe for the 49ers. They have to get back to that if they want to turn this thing around. Right now, I think they're really missing Trent Williams at left tackle. And I think Deebo Samuel being out has really hurt this offense as well, especially because he's such a unique hybrid player. It really opens up the playbook. If they can get those two guys back coming out of the bye, it sounds like there's a chance that both those guys could be coming back. I think that'll help. Perfect time for them to start to get healthy and kind of recalibrate this team. But yeah, if you're a Niners fan, this has been a shocking stretch, and it'll be really interesting to see what kind of changes and tweaks they make coming out of the bye. Alex, Denver shocks Kansas City. And apparently the story here was that Patrick Mahomes was sick. That's everything I've read. It looked like he had flu-like symptoms during this game. He didn't look right this entire game. He threw some bad picks, no touchdowns. His young wide receivers, Sky Moore and Rashee Rice, they both had huge drops in this game. A ton of turnovers, 5 turnovers in this game. It was just a sloppy, ugly game for the Kansas City Chiefs for the first time in a long time. It really feels like they don't have enough firepower at wide receiver. I'm actually a little surprised that they didn't take some draft capital and try to make a move here at the deadline to go get a wide receiver. I like Sky Moore. I like Rashee Rice. We know about Kelsey, but it feels like they're kind of missing that number one guy. They're kind of missing that number one guy on the outside for this offense. It just doesn't quite look the same. Now, the story for Kansas City this year has really been the defense. When you look at the offense, they haven't really played a great offensive game all year long. What are your thoughts on this game here? Because this was definitely one of the more shocking outcomes.
Yeah, you know, we have a friend of ours that me and Brad both know who called this game and said they were going to lose. But yeah, no, I thought they should have. They usually should have made a move at some point. Kadarius Toney, who is very talented as a Gators fan, I can tell you, but it's just a knucklehead and just isn't as focused as he should be, which is a person I thought that they should, were expecting perhaps to elevate this year. He hasn't. Rashee Rice, good receiver, rookie, looks like he's going to be a guy. Sky Moore, I think a guy that we were both high on getting to this team just hasn't been. The only move they made was to bring back Mecole Hardman, and then it's Travis Kelce and a bunch of guys, a surging Rashee Rice who's getting better, but then there's just everybody else. MVS, Marcus Valdez Scantling is really just a 9-route guy. He's a true X, but he doesn't run routes very well. If I was the Chiefs, and I know it would have never happened because it's in division, I would have targeted Davante Adams. Well, you know, he would have been number one on my board with a bullet to save him, you know, to free him from the hell that he is in with the Raiders. But I know that trade would have never happened. Obviously, Jerry Jeudy was a person that was on the trade block, another in-division rival that more than likely you wouldn't have been able to make that trade. But there should have been someone that you should have been able to identify that were sellers that you could have gone and perhaps gotten. Even obviously, there were maybe not great tier one receivers, but a tier two receivers. I think a tier two receiver with a Rashee Rice, with a Travis Kelce, would make this team a lot more formidable. But again, these games happen. I'm not off of the Kansas City Chiefs. The defense had been playing well. This was just a game, you know, that they were just simply off. I know from my perspective and from this podcast perspective, if you've heard me talk about the Denver Broncos, this was a game I was expecting them to lose because of the way their schedule plays out. But it happens. They'll come back. We know who Andy Reid is. We know who Patrick Mahomes is. They'll come back. And this is not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl, but they'll come back, right the ship, get themselves surging back again to go into the playoffs to see what they could do, because all you need to do is get into the playoffs.
Yeah, I don't want to take anything away from Denver, but they didn't win this game. KC lost this game. Dropped passes, a ton of turnovers, just sloppy football. Like I said, Mahomes didn't look right. And I don't want to overreact to this one either, because you're right. It's just one game. These types of games happen, especially against a division rival. But here's the thing. You look around the AFC right now. Ravens look really good. The Bengals look scary again. The Jags are putting it together. Miami is explosive. This could be the first time in the Mahomes era that they could be going on the road this year in the AFC playoffs. The official ticketing app of Pint Glass Football is now SeatGeek. I can't recommend them enough, guys. I've been using SeatGeek for years. You want to go to a game this season? SeatGeek is here to take the confusion out of buying tickets, making sure you get the best seats at the best prices. With SeatGeek, you'll never have to worry about overpaying for tickets again. How? They put a 0 to 10 score on each ticket, so you know you're getting a good deal. But here's the real game changer. You can get $20 off your first ticket purchase with the code PGFPOD. That's right, $20 off with code PGFPOD. This season, make every game day epic with SeatGeek. Download the SeatGeek app and remember to enter the code PGFPOD to grab your $20 discount. You know what's important when you're having a good time? Staying hydrated. And that's where Liquid IV comes in, the category-winning hydration brand that's fueling your well-being. With just one stick of Liquid IV, you get 2 times faster hydration than water alone, plus 5 essential vitamins to keep you feeling your best. And let's not forget about the convenience factor. The packaging is perfect for on the go, whether you're tailgating or just hanging out on the couch. But what really sets Liquid IV apart is the amazing flavors. Personally, I'm all about the Concord Grape and Lemon Lime. And with 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks, Liquid IV is made with premium ingredients to give you the hydration and nourishment you need. Get 20% off when you go to liquidiv.com and use code PGFP at checkout. That's 20% off anything you order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code PGFP at liquidiv.com. So next time you're cracking open a cold one and settling in for the big game, make sure you've got Liquid IV by your side. Trust me, your body will thank you. Zencastr is the ultimate web-based podcasting solution. It provides high-quality audio and video podcast production and hosting. With a full suite of professional tools, podcasters can seamlessly record, produce, and publish studio-quality content all from one dashboard. Zencastr's post-production process takes the headache out of audio production. Set the right podcast loudness and levels while reducing background noise with a click of a button. Coordinating all your guests to record in person is painful and tedious. Easily invite up to 11 participants per recording with one click. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code PGFP and you'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experiences I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Alex, the Twitter poll question of the week, at PGF Podcast. Got a lot of responses from you guys on this one. Love engaging with PGF Nation on these Twitter poll questions. Should the Packers draft a quarterback in April? Last I checked on the results here, it was 80% are saying yes, 20% are saying no. Alex, before we dive into this topic here, what are your thoughts on the results and the Packers here kind of looking ahead possibly to next April?
Well, I say absolutely yes. There are too many talented quarterbacks in the draft, whether anybody likes them or not. This is a very quarterback-rich draft. The Packers, I thought, did themselves a due diligence in reworking his deal to say, hey, we believe in you, giving him more money as the starter, coming as they move away from Aaron Rodgers, and he has simply not shown what they thought that he should have shown, or even us in this podcast, because both myself and Brad did pick Green Bay to win this division, but he's simply not the quarterback or at the level that they thought they should have been. He has not matriculated to the level that we thought. And I can point out, I can tell you one thing. This is simply from watching tape. Luke Musgrave on a seam route, there is in the playbook, Luke Musgrave is open every single time. I've watched tape on this. They've run it at least, I want to say, 5 times. And I think they play 8 games, but they've run it at least 5 times. And Jordan Love cannot, for whatever reason, cannot hit this play. And Luke Musgrave is sitting open up the seam. And it's schemed very well. He's wide open, and he cannot hit this play. And that is a telltale sign of what type of quarterback you are when you when the play works, everything breaks down, breaks the way it's supposed to break, and you cannot hit Luke Musgrave up the seam. I've seen him throw that ball falling away. I've actually seen him flat-footed throw the ball. He simply cannot hit this play in the middle of the field. And it's at least, I would say, for about 15 to 20 yards every time. Should he hit him in stride? So, yes, if I'm the Packers, I'm 1,000% looking at something, someone in this quarterback draft. I have to, because right now I don't want to give you a big contract. And you, what you're showing me after I handed you the keys, you're showing me you didn't learn anything from those three to four years that you were sitting behind Aaron Rodgers.
I had high hopes for Jordan Love, especially after how well he played in the preseason. But I think PGF Nation might be right on with this as well, Alex. Yes, it's his first year as the starter. Yes, we're only through week eight, but he's in his third year with the same coach and the same system. It's not the same as a rookie starter here. This guy should be further along than he is. When it's a rookie, I get it. You can be a little more patient. But I think they've got a punt on this one, because I think you're right. This offense just couldn't come up with any big plays. They've struggled to get explosive plays this year from Jordan Love in this offense. And in the fourth quarter especially, the Packers got the ball twice inside the Vikings 15-yard line and came away empty. The offense stalls way too often. They're not putting enough points on the board, and a lot of it is coming back to Love and his inability to make big plays. He just doesn't look like the guy that you can build around, and I don't think we've seen enough improvement from him at this point, to your point, Alex. And I'm starting to have real doubts that he's even going to be starting in Green Bay next season either. I think it's time to switch gears here. I think they've seen enough. Pittsburgh Steelers lose at home to the Jaguars. Look, we don't have to spend a whole lot of time on this, but I wanted to make some points about this game because Matt Canada, a guy that we've talked about as offense coordinator in Pittsburgh, look, he's garbage. We know that. We've talked about that. This offense is hard to watch. But Kenny Pickett is not the guy. He just is not the guy. And as much as we want to point the finger at Matt Canada, we have to realize that Kenny Pickett is so limited of a quarterback that it's making it hard. It's going to be hard for really any offensive coordinator. The offense is absolutely terrible. And even with the bad play calling, they shouldn't be this bad. The Steelers defense had three takeaways in this game and only allowed one touchdown, and they still lost by 10. Never felt like for a second during this game that they could win. It really is starting to look like they hit again on some defensive draft picks. Joey Porter Jr. is starting to look really good. Nick Herbig, the fourth round pick, he's playing great. Unfortunately for them, Mike Tomlin in this defense is so good, they're going to win just enough games every year to never have a shot at drafting the top-end prospect at quarterback. Without one, and you, when you have an average at best quarterback like Kenny Pickett, they're never really going to compete in this current AFC North with guys like Burrow and Lamar Jackson. They're just in a tough spot, Alex, because this defense, it seems like almost every week, puts them in a position where they could win games, and they cannot move the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know I called this game in terms of what it is, but if we're just talking about the game from within itself, we got Mitchell Trubisky in the game, who came in and had 130 yards and one TD, two interceptions. I'm laughing because we all knew what Mitch Trubisky was. And this is a product of a team that has a Super Bowl caliber defense, a lot of great talent on offense, and not going after a quarterback to put it all together. I said, even last year, I said, if I was the Pittsburgh Steelers, I would go after Aaron Rodgers. I had said it for 2 years. That your team is ready. They're ready right now. And these windows close, and they close fast. I know the Steelers are consummate professionals. They always do. They always are they don't reload. They only retool, similar to the Ravens in a sense, similar to the Packers in a sense. They just need to do a little retooling. They'll go down to 7-9, or rather 7-10 at this point, and then they'll pop back up and be a playoff team within the next 2 years, no matter what. That's the retooling aspect that the Pittsburgh Steelers have been accustomed to for years, as well as a couple of other teams that I mentioned. But this wasn't, you have a true Super Bowl window right now. that defense on fire. And let's be clear, Brad, the defense actually is not that good. They're not ranked very high. What happens is they get high impact plays at critical times from TJ Watt and Alex Highsmith. That's what they've been doing. And they have a rookie that looks very good in Joey Porter. And Joey Porter is proving that he should have been a number one pick. Sorry, Emmanuel Forbes, who keeps getting benched because he keeps getting torched. But it is what it is. That happens in the draft. So this team was ready to go because of the conservativeness of the Rooneys, of the Steelers as an organization as well. They're not making the moves that need to be made because Kenny Pickett is not it. I know he went to Pitt. I know he played in the stadium. But you need to move off of this quarterback, and it's okay. Hopefully they can pivot and get back on track to what we know Steeler football to be.
Yeah, before we shift gears here, Alex, the last point I want to make here, because it was on full display in this game, Travis Etienne and Najee Harris got drafted in the same class. They were picked back-to-back. Man, would the Steelers like to do a redo on that one? Because Najee Harris is just simply not the guy. He's not the bell cow back they thought he was going to be, that a three-down back, a star back that they thought they were getting in the first round. And Travis Etienne is one of the best young running backs in the game. That was really obvious to me just how much better Etienne is than a guy like Najee Harris at this point in their careers. Want to talk about some young quarterbacks here, Alex. Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, the number one, number two picks, faced off in their first time ever. Young has really struggled most of the year to really try to elevate the Panthers. The bust conversation has even been whispered the last few weeks. I think it's way too early to say that. I'm not saying that, but there's been some people kind of wondering if this was really the right pick at number one, starting to question if he was the right pick. Let's put it that way. Maybe not bust, but certainly some question marks around this guy, especially with how well C.J. Stroud has played in Houston. But I was encouraged with what I saw from Bryce Young in this game. Finally made some really high-level throws in a tight game to help get Carolina its first win. Kind of an under-the-radar game. Neither one of these teams are great. They're rebuilding. But it was fun to see the two young quarterbacks play against each other, and it was nice to see Bryce Young kind of take that big step forward.
Yeah, nice game by Bryce Young, because we knew had he lost this game, this would have been the woulda, coulda, shoulda afterthoughts from all the pundits. So good for Bryce Young, good for the Panthers. Bad for me as a fantasy owner, because I started C.J. Stroud over Sam Howell. That's a wordplay there. I did against the Eagles. But yeah, good for Bryce Young. I mean, no running game. I think there's a lot of context to what's happening with Bryce Young, because it was like, oh, look how small he looks and this, that, and the third. That offensive line has not been living up to what we thought it would have been. Not they would have been world beaters, but we thought it would have been a lot more solid. Their running game isn't what we thought it would be. I mean, even in this game alone, Chuba Hubbard, 15 carries, 28 yards. That's not a rookie quarterback's best friend. You know, Adam Thielen has shown to be the veteran that we thought he would have been, but they have several other young receivers that are not stepping up. I mean, you have Jonathan Mingo, Terrence Marshall, that was part of that big LSU trio that was going crazy with Joe Burrow, and they're just simply not stepping up. So you need a lot of help on the offensive side. I mean, I believe that defense is good. I just believe they've just been on the field too much. On the other hand, to C.J. Stroud's credit, Damian Pierce, who was a breakout star from Florida, I have to plug my school all the time, but he hasn't been the running back that he was the previous year, but he's still been surging forward. So this was a game that I don't think that anybody expected the Carolina Panthers to win, but kudos to them. Kudos to Bryce Young. Good game. He looked solid. He looked poised, even though he still got sacked another 6 times. They have to do something. He also has to make decision-making faster. They also have to clean up that offensive line, it appears. But kudos to him for standing in there and delivering, and they won 15-13.
Alex, Will Levis gets his debut start here. Absolutely shredded the Falcons defense. 238 yards, 4 touchdowns, no picks. I mean, look, he has more touchdown passes in one game than Ryan Tannehill has had all season. This game was really, really an unbelievable performance by him. He unlocked DeAndre Hopkins, who has kind of been MIA since arriving in Tennessee, with 4 passes for 128 yards, 3 touchdowns. Bryce Young CJ Stroud, who we talked about a minute ago, they were viewed as the most NFL ready coming out of this draft. But we talked about Levis in the offseason. Yes, he had some holes in his game. He had some things he needed to work on, certainly. But there's no denying his physical gifts. We knew that that was really a guy who had a lot of physical traits that you could point to, and it was really on full display in this game. Big, strong, athletic kid, big arm. I mean, he was absolutely slinging it, Alex. He had some wow throws. There was actually some drops and some incompletions that were even impressive by this guy. I was really blown away from what I saw from him. Now, it's one game, so never want to overreact to one game, certainly. And I'm sure he's going to come back down to earth like all rookies do. But it's really hard not to be impressed with what he did last Sunday. No reason to think that he won't be the starter the rest of the year. I said during our AFC South preview episode, I thought the Titans would be sellers at the trade deadline. They already traded a former All-Pro safety. I also said that near the trade deadline, either Willis or Levis would be starting. It looks like it's coming to fruition here in Tennessee.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, coming into the draft, there was this guy. He came in with this chiseled body, with this chiseled jaw, and then did not perform at the combine the way that people thought. That big arm that everybody was talking about that he had was not on display, which is part of the reason that he dropped to the second round. I wasn't high on him. I believe you weren't high on him either, which is why I had a bunch of quarterbacks when we went through our quarterback rankings for the draft. I had a few ahead of him as well. But in this game, he got an opportunity. He was able to show and prove. This is probably part of the gunslinger mentality in him, is just trusting DeAndre Hopkins and throwing the ball up and making plays. But however, DeAndre Hopkins is a very skilled route runner, was getting open. And there was one pass that he threw. There was one pass, and people always say I nerd out because I watch so much tape. There was one pass that DeAndre Hopkins had broke free on a bend route to the sideline that he missed. DeAndre Hopkins caught on a great catch, but it was out of bounds, and it was simply because he didn't set his feet. Those are the little things that I'm looking at that he can fix and move forward on. So, you know what, Will Levis, you get to walk away, you know, proud, and tell all the pundits and people that were against you, give them the finger for a game, and I specify a game, and we have to take that. But now we're watching, because I'm sure you will be the starter going forward. Brad alluded to it earlier, and I'll just give you the specific numbers. Prior to this game, Ryan Tannehill had only thrown 2 touchdowns. Will Levis threw 4 in one game. So that tells you how stagnant this offense has been. And for you fantasy owners, if Will Levis continues on this type of trend, whether it's this great of a trend or whether he's at least getting the ball out and down the field, this bodes well for us Derrick Henry owners who have been waiting for him to take off. Now, let me go to the Falcons for a moment. Desmond Ridder got hurt. This is something that I had been waiting for. I thought it was going to happen naturally in terms of Desmond Ridder getting benched, because I think we've seen enough of Desmond Ridder. You can't have Drake London and Kyle Pitts and can't get the ball to them. There's only but so much I can put on Arthur Smith in scheming. Some of it has to go on you. Now enter Taylor Heineke, who I thought was a very solid quarterback in Washington, and has shown he can get teams to the playoffs and be to a playoff game, and a solid play to show him to be a very good high-end backup. Here he comes in now and is able to go in, throw a touchdown, try to make the game, try to get them back into the game, make the game interesting. It'll be interesting to see what Arthur Smith does now, because I don't know about you, Brad. I've seen enough of Desmond Ridder. I never thought he was a guy coming out of Cincinnati. Now he's had an opportunity. If you go back to last year, I think the last 4 games, and now he's had 8 games. Well, let's say 7.5 games this season. You're not a guy. Taylor Heineke can come in, steady the ship. Perhaps Bijan Robinson can start to look like the guy that we all think he is, that running game. And then we can, for fantasy owners again, if you drafted Drake London or Kyle Pitts, now you can see what Kyle Pitts and Drake London can do, because this offense simply has not looked like what we thought it would look like coming into the season.
Dallas Cowboys crushed the LA Rams. Cowboys dominated this game in really all three phases, but this is what Dallas always does. They beat up on the bad teams and the average teams. Then everyone gets all excited and starts talking about them as a real contender. And then they get beat by the actual contenders. They're a good football team. Don't get me wrong. They're a talented team. We've seen them on display when they play these types of teams, but this was a talent mismatch. Look, the Rams have maybe, what, one great player still in his prime at this point? Sean McVay deserves credit. He's done a really good job keeping them competitive. But this win, it doesn't really impress me, Alex. It doesn't impress me that much, I should say, because I've seen this movie 100 times, and I already know the ending. All right, Alex, let's wrap up NFL Week 8 with the game ball. Alex, who's going to get your game ball this week?
Though they beat my beloved Raiders, I have to give it to Jahyr Gibbs. I mean, this is a person that I have been speaking about for weeks, not understanding why he hadn't gotten any touches, why David Montgomery was dominating all the carries in that offense. But he showed up and he proved yesterday. I mean, 26 carries, 152 yards, plus a touch at 5.8 yards a clip. And then as well as 5 catches for 37 yards. And regardless of what anybody wants to talk about the Raiders, they were a top 5 defense going into that game. So this wasn't just like, oh, it's the Raiders we just ran on. No, this was a top 5 defense that he did that to. So I want to give him credit because I have been talking about him for weeks. I think me and you, Brad, have spoke about even in real time when they drafted him, why did they draft him so early? But last night he did show and prove why he was drafted so early and what he did. Let's see if he continues, and then I'll finally move off the point that was not necessarily a bad draft pick, but he was just picked too early. But we're watching. You have now put us, or at least put me, on notice, and I'm paying attention now. But kudos to you, Jahyr Gibbs.
Alex, my Week 8 game ball is going to go to Giants edge defender Kayvon Thibodeau. 9 tackles, 3 tackles for a loss, 3 quarterback hits, and 3 sacks. Monster game, and he's really developing into a really, really good player with 8.5 sacks already this season. He's averaging just over a sack per game to start his career, and he is a building block for a Giants team that is still trying to rebuild, but this is a guy that you can build around on the defensive line. What a game he had. Also, let's take a look ahead here to NFL Week 9. Let's preview some of these big games here. Let's start with Chiefs-Dolphins, maybe the best matchup of the weekend. Kansas City, we talked about them earlier, Alex. They were embarrassed last week, and I'm not going to read too much into that 24-9 loss like we talked about at Denver. They outgained Denver in that game, 5 turnovers. It was just a sloppy game that they kind of gave away. Mahomes was sick, clearly off his game. Dolphins, I said it last week, they're a paper tiger. They're 6-2. They've got that explosive offense, but they beat up on bad teams, and their 2 losses are to the Bills and the Eagles. They got stomped in both those games. I think this is a big bounce-back spot for KC after that bad showing last week. I think they win easy in this game over in Germany. Early game, guys. You got to get up for this one, and I think they're going to cover the 2.5 as well.
Yeah, big game coming up. Perhaps this was that Denver game was a trap game for KC because they were looking ahead to, I believe this game, yeah, exactly, we said in Germany. So good defense played by Kansas City. Miami looking to, let's see, I know Tyreek Hill, he was supposed to be injured. He didn't look injured when he played, but we'll see what this game looks like. Kansas City is not in the position to get into a shootout with Miami. So this is going to be have to a lot to be on, I, from my perspective, be on their running game and the defense controlling and containing Waddle and Hill.
Seahawks, Ravens, Alex. Ravens, to me, they still seem like that AFC team that everybody has kind of forgotten about, but they're really good. They're playing some great football right now. They're 11th in total offense. They have the 3rd best rushing attack in the NFL and 2nd in total defense. They're looking like a complete football team right now. Lamar Jackson, I think, should be able to take advantage of a suspect Seattle pass defense in this matchup. And when you look at Seattle this year, they've had some scheduling fortune here, playing Carolina, the Giants, Arizona, and Cleveland with PJ Walker in 4 of their last 5 games here. And the Seahawks still haven't scored more than 24 points in any of the last 4 games. I don't think that bodes well versus this Ravens defense. But Seattle, we know, is well coached, and they just find ways to keep themselves in games, and I think they will in this one. I think it should be a close game. Both teams are going to be looking to run the ball. I think Baltimore is still the better team, though, Alex. Seattle is a little bit inflated because of that schedule. Traveling across the country to play in Baltimore also makes this a tough matchup for them. I like the Ravens to win, but I like Seattle to cover the 5.5.
You know what I'll say about Seattle? I like what I saw from their running game. We finally got to see that running game on display with what we saw against a very tough defense in Cleveland. But Zach Charbonnet and Kenneth Walker, and then I also saw Zach Charbonnet involved in the passing game as well. So I think with that, those two things combined, they come with that running game, and they're going to be able to test that Baltimore defense, which is Baltimore's Baltimore. They always have some type of defense, but I think they get to put some pressure on that defense, and we know that the back end of that defense is also flailing as well. So Tyler Lockett, consummate pro, DK Metcalf, and Jackson Smith and Jigba, we get to see if they can match up and hold on, along with Noah Fant as well. We can't forget him, to see if they can cover and what Seattle can scheme up. I think I would take Seattle in that game, to be honest with you.
Bills, Bengals, Alex, after the big win against Miami, Buffalo has had three bad performances here. The defense is not creating turnovers, and those injuries on the defense are serious. They're starting to really show here. Joe Burrow, like we talked about earlier, he appears to be healthy now, playing some really good football. They appear to be peaking, or maybe not peaking, but at least on the rise here. The Bengals with three straight wins, starting to really put it together. Bills lose to the Jaguars in London. They should have probably lost to the Giants. They lose to the Patriots. They beat Tampa, but the Bucs still had success versus that defense. I think Burrow is going to carve this team up, Alex. This is going to be a tough matchup for them, and that defense has really been kind of struggling. I'll lay the 3 points and take the Bengals at home here. I'm feeling good about where Cincinnati's headed.
Yeah, Cincinnati's trending up. Buffalo has been inconsistent all year long, and I think that going to Cincinnati, Cincinnati's going to be able to take advantage of the back end of that defense being hurt. It looks like also one of the things I did not mention in the Cincinnati game, that offensive line seems to be now hitting their stride. They have a lot of talent. It's not they have a bad offensive line. There's a lot of talent, and it seems that they're all healthy and they're surging at this point in time. So I think they're going to beat Buffalo, and I don't think it's going to be close.
Cowboys, Eagles, NFC East rivalry game here. Jalen Hurts clearly is not 100%. After watching him against Washington, it really is starting to show, but the rushing just isn't there for him, and I think it's coming back to the health issue here. They're trying to protect him. I get that, but here's the thing. Their passing game is good. Even though he hasn't been 100% for a while, that's not holding back the Eagles from putting up points. The Cowboys, they get demolished against the 49ers. Then they come out since then, and they've looked great. But Dallas is struggling to run the ball, and they're going to have to lean on Dak Prescott to throw the ball a lot. I think he will have some success throwing the ball because Philly is the number one rush defense in the NFL, but they allow 247 passing yards per game. That's sixth worst in the NFL. It really comes down to this, Alex. I think Prescott in this offense and CeeDee Lamb, I think they're going to be able to move the ball. I also think Philadelphia is going to be able to move the ball here. I could see a lot of points in this game, but the question is, do you trust Dak Prescott in this spot? For me, it's a solid no. So I think what I'm looking at in this game is the Philadelphia defense that's really going to hold that rushing game down. It's going to make Dak Prescott really throw the ball a lot, and I think he'll have some success, like I said. But the bottom line, I trust Jalen Hurts in Philly way more in a big game than I do Dak Prescott and the Cowboys. I think Philly wins, and they cover. And I also like the over in this game as well because, like I said, I think both these offenses are going to be able to score points.
Yeah, I'm completely torn on this game. I mean, on one side, you can say, hey, that Philly defense coming to town and how they are confident in what they do. And then on the other side is, hey, here comes Philly, but Jalen Hurts is the league leader in turnovers, total turnovers, including interceptions and fumbles lost as well. So we know we're going to have an opportunity And if we're an opportunistic defense, we can have a chance to maybe turn a pick six or give our offense a short field. So I think this is going to be a close game. I'm hoping for a very good game. But the way that I will say this, the way that A.J. Brown has been playing, he has been a one-man wrecking crew. I mean, he is not as big as T.O., but he looks like he's T.O. out there in terms of how he's been receiving and his run after the catch. We talked about it with the 49ers, a lot of their receivers, how they look, they turn into running backs after the catch, but he looks like an absolute monster out there when he gets his hands on the ball. So it'll be an interesting game. I can't wait to watch that one.
Alex, I've got a WTF moment of the week here.
Oh,
this one might have flown under the radar for some of you guys, but Jonathan Smith, Oregon State head coach, then number 11 Oregon State, they were in a tight game versus Arizona. They drove deep into Arizona territory, and they couldn't get into the end zone. They line up for a 34-yard field goal with 3 seconds left on the clock, which at the time would have given them a 13-10 halftime lead. Instead of kicking it, they run a fake. The holder flips the ball to the kicker, who then took off toward the end zone but came up way short after getting tackled because, I don't know, he's a kicker? What are you doing in this situation? This has got to be one of the worst calls I've ever seen. Oregon State didn't need a touchdown. The game was tied. Why not just take the lead in that spot? I absolutely was baffled by this play call here. Plus, not only that, Alex, if you want to go for a touchdown there, what's the better play, leaving your offense on the field or having your kicker try to run for it? This was one of the worst in-game coaching calls I've seen all year. Oh, and by the way, Oregon State lost the game by 3 points. Alex had some big moments in college football over the weekend. I want to start with probably the biggest game. It's a game that we talked about last week, and it was a game that, quite frankly, I thought would be a lot closer than it was, but Oregon has a statement win over Utah. The Ducks, they looked like a legit national championship caliber program with a 35-6 beatdown of a very good Utah team, a team that had won 29 of its last 30 home games. This is a team that's really tough to beat at home, a tough atmosphere, and the Ducks took the crowd away immediately. Bo Nix completed 14 of his first 15 passes with 3 first-half touchdowns. This game was really over before it got started. Oregon has a solid case as maybe the most complete team in college football. I think they certainly belong in the discussion. They're big, they're tough, physical team up front on the offense and defensive line. They have a high-end quarterback, playmakers at wide receiver, big-time running backs. Outside of some questionable fourth-down calls versus Washington a couple weeks ago, this team could be undefeated, and we'd be asking if they deserve to be a top-3 team. But even with the one loss, I think they have a legit shot at the college football playoff. Alex, I'll ask you, are the Oregon Ducks a national championship contender?
Absolutely. The way that this team is constructed, like you said, they're big where it counts most, which is in the trenches. And you have a 6-year quarterback who's basically seen everything in NFL terms from being in college because of COVID and then because of the 5th-year option as well. So he's been able to see a lot in college. He has a veteran team. He has a good coach that knows defense and understands defense. And like I said, they're big and huge in the trenches. And the old adage is, you win games in the trenches. So Oregon is a team that I don't think a lot of teams want to face if they get in those playoffs, because I definitely think they deserve a shot.
Biggest upset of the weekend, Kansas upsets number 6 Oklahoma. This was the first Jayhawks home win over a top 10 team since 1984. Pretty incredible what they pulled off here, because Oklahoma, this was a team that really controlled its own destiny as far as being able to control having a trip to the college football playoff themselves. And they had the easiest schedule in the Big 12 remaining. Their chances just took a major hit with this loss. The Sooners' run defense was awful in this game. They let Kansas run all over them. Now, Texas on the other side of this here, Alex, because I want to talk about the other Big 12 contender here. They won this weekend, but the Quinn Ewers injury is still a week-to-week situation, and I think it's still concerning. I don't think they're a legit contender without him. Now, Malik Murphy, he wasn't great. He threw for 170 yards and two touchdowns, one interception. I mean, not great, not terrible necessarily. They cruised to a win because the defense was lights out for Texas. But I've got real concerns here for them because the Big 12, with these two teams that we were really circling as being potential college football playoff teams, I think both of them could be on the outside looking in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the injury was really a big, huge blow to the Texas Longhorns. I mean, we got to see Malik Murphy. I know people are clamoring to see Arch Manning, to see when he's going to get his turn as well, or even if he needs to get a turn. If Malik Murphy continues to win games, we may not even see him this year. But unfortunately for me as a fan, Texas is not a team I would want to see in the playoffs simply because they're not going to be at full strength. And I think when you have to play a Michigan, Georgia, or any of these other Pac-12 teams, I don't think they'll be a match for what they can do against some of these, the lower echelon of quarterbacks that are on Texas. So Texas, you did a great job this year. Kudos to you. But unfortunately for me, I'm not looking forward to you being in the playoffs. But great win against BYU, continuing on. You're number 7 right now. And the future is bright if you believe in Arch Manning.
USC escapes versus Cal. Look, it's the same story every week. I'm not going to take too much time on this, Alex, but Caleb Williams went for almost 370 yards and two touchdowns, and the offense does what they do pretty much every week. But the defense, once again, is the storyline for this USC Trojans team. Gave up 49 points and a potential game-winning score against Cal. This has to be, no doubt about it, Alex, the worst coach defense in the entire country. I feel like we talk about it all the time. I don't want to belabor the point here. They've got talent on that side of the ball. They've got guys who are going to play on Sunday. They just are consistently out of position. They're in the wrong formations. They're in the wrong play calls. And here they are having Caleb Williams and Lincoln Riley having to bail them out every week in these shootout type situations. It's the reason that they're not a contender this year. And it's just crazy, especially versus a team like Cal.
Yeah, I mean, if Lincoln Riley is going to continue to be the coach, I know there's a lot about him going to the NFL, but he's going to continue to be the coach at USC. He's going to have to figure something out on defense because I understand having not a lot of players or having a bad defense, but you can't be this bad. You have to be able to step up, have to be able to make a play at some point in time to stop someone because you're not going to survive, specifically going into the Big Ten, if you don't have a defense.
Georgia and Florida, no Brock Bowers in this one, but no problem for the Bulldogs. The most important offensive player, obviously, is tight end Brock Bowers. We know how special a player this guy is. He was sidelined versus Florida, and Carson Beck still lit up the Gators for 315 passing yards and two touchdowns. That UGA offense posted nearly 500 yards in this game. I mean, Georgia smashed them. I actually thought that this game could be a little closer, but 43-20, the final score, and really the final score made it look closer than it actually was. This new offense for this Georgia Bulldogs team is starting to take shape, and I think really for the first time all year, watch out for Georgia because it feels like they're clicking down the stretch here.
Yeah, I mentioned this game to say, you know what, let's just keep an eye on it. I didn't think we were necessarily going to win, but I thought it could be close and maybe we could get something special that happens at the end, but obviously not. We are who we thought they were. Georgia is still surging in the polls and going to be looking surging going into the playoffs as well.
Last game I want to talk about here quickly, Alex. Washington got a 42-33 win over Stanford. But here's the thing. They have not looked sharp back-to-back weeks now versus inferior teams. The Huskies gave up almost 500 yards, and they could not stop Cardinal quarterback Ashton Daniels. He threw for 367 yards. Now, they keep winning, but if I'm a Huskies fan, I'm concerned here because they just have not looked like the same team that we saw versus Oregon.
I know Michael Penix last week, if I'm not mistaken, last week he didn't even throw a touchdown. Then coming into this week, you thought this could be a get-right game for them. But it wasn't what we thought it would be. I mean, they're still sitting, I believe, at number 5 right now, if I'm not mistaken. So they're still in the running. But they're going to need to tighten up some things if they think they're going to be able to make a run in the playoffs.
Yeah, because the way it's looking right now, look, there's still a decent amount of football left, but they could be on a collision course here with Oregon, and Oregon is surging. Like we talked a minute ago about how well they've been playing, and Washington, like I said, getting the wins, but not looking very impressive in the process. So that's certainly something to keep an eye on down the stretch here in the Pac-12 race. Alex, I want to wrap up college football with the Week 9 helmet sticker. It's going to go to cornerback Travis Hunter for Colorado. Now, he plays both sides of the ball, but this week he gets the helmet sticker for his defense. He had 4 tackles and 2 interceptions and only allowed 1 catch for 12 yards. He was lights out in coverage. Now, they didn't get the win, but big time play that I saw from Travis Hunter on the outside. I was really impressed. He was a lockdown player at the cornerback position. Alex, well, we did it again. We still have not had a 2-0 week in our locks of the week. Alex, you took last week the Jaguars -2.5. And the prop bet, Travis Etienne, over 100 yards rushing and a touchdown. I took UCLA, laid the 17 points versus Colorado. Let's see if we can finally get this done, Alex. Who's your lock of the week this week?
Hey, Brad, we have to get back off the snide here. So you know what? I have to make sure that I'm picking games that I'm absolutely sure about. I am going to take the Falcons over the Vikings. Vikings visiting the Falcons. No more Kirk Cousins. No Triple J. A pedestrian run game, and a bad offensive line. So I'm going to take the Falcons, whether it's Taylor Heineke or Desmond Ritter starting. I'm going to take them. I'm going to lay the 5.
Alex, I've got a pick in the NFL as well this week. Carolina Panthers, +2.5 versus the Colts. Look, the big change that we saw last week for this offense was motion. Moving guys all over the place pre-snap. And Alex talks about this all the time on this pod. We watch tape here at PGF. That's what the tape showed me, Alex. I saw some wrinkles in this offense, and a lot of it started with the motion and creating some mismatches, getting that pre-snap motion, and it really made a big difference for Bryce Young in this game. The defense also looked good last week. And here's the other side to this, though. When you look at the Colts, what have the Colts done to be a favorite on the road versus anyone? I don't see how they should be favored in this game. Good value as far as a betting matchup here. They're only favored for one reason, Alex, and it's because of how people view this Carolina team after that bad start. But like I said, I like the improvement I've seen. Love taking a home dog, especially when they're showing that improvement. Give me the Carolina Panthers plus the points. That is going to do it for today's episode, PGF Nation. Hope you enjoyed it. But guys, please be sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast if you enjoyed the show. If you haven't already, we really appreciate those ratings and reviews. It really means a lot, guys. So be sure you do that. Apple, drop us a rating and review. Spotify, give us a 5-star rating if you love the show. We always appreciate it, guys. But like I said, that is going to do it once again. I'm Brad Fowler. He's Alex Higdon. This is Pint Glass Football, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Pint Glass Football Podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow us on Twitter @PGF Podcast.